Renegade Broadcasting, hard-hitting talk radio.
Welcome, everybody. This is the Renegade Roundtable, and I'm your host, Nick Spiro. It's Saturday night, March 18th, 2017. I'd like some callers to join me tonight. Please call in at 747-999-6407. I'm in my second bunker here in the south side of Chicago. Pretty decent day. I hope everybody else is enjoying themselves this evening. We had a pretty good show last night. I was very pleased to have Brendan O'Connell join me last night. It was unfortunate that we didn't get the entire show. There were some things that I would have liked to have asked him regarding James Packer, a film producer whose business partners with Steve Mnuchin, and he has a company called The Rat Pack with Dune Entertainment, who happens to be Steven Mnuchin, skull and bones, one of Trump's finance managers, and for the most part, a complete scumbag involved with a lot of the 2008 people's losses of homes and the mortgage crisis, the other bubble that occurred in that time frame. So, yeah, we've got a Skull and Bones, Goldman Sachs scumbag. And I wanted to ask him about James Packer because with the connection with Scientology and with Julian Assange as well and his cult that he grew up in called The Family. And I wanted to get into that type of more the cult type of knowledge and what he, you know, being from Australia, you know, you're going to get maybe some more information than you're going to get anywhere else. So other than that, I thought that the show went really well. And I hope everybody was able to enjoy that. And if you haven't listened to it, you should. There was the Al Jazeera four-part series that he brought up that I do believe that everybody should take a look at. For the Al Jazeera network to put out something so crucial and having this investigative reporter going under deep undercover and rubbing elbows and kind of creating this persona that he wanted to be a part of this pro-Israeli lobby that occurs over in the UK. And the four-part series is actually called The Lobby. And with the APAC conference coming up, kind of ties in with the mood and feeling with the apocalypse. So I think everybody should take a look at that. There's a character that is the one that does a lot of the wheeling and dealing, even bringing MPs to Israel for travel and trips to get them on board for the Israeli lobbies and the different tentacles like the Young Fabian Society and the Fabian Society, which I've spoken about and other people also do, especially Lark from Texas, with the communitarianism and the Labor Party. That was their creation as well. And the different tentacles of this lobby. Another one was the Conservative Friends of Israel, Labor Friends of Israel, otherwise known as LFI, Jewish Labor Movement, also JLM. So this covers a lot of the different power movers and shakers within the Israeli lobby over in the UK. So that was powerful. I didn't get to see all of it, though, and the different titles of the four-part series, I believe, are worth noting as well. The first one is called Young Friends of Israel. Second part is The Training Session. The third is An Anti-Semitic Trope. The fourth is The Takedown. So they're all about 25, 27 minutes long, and it's packed with information and just the corruption and just how lobbyists are some of the people that we need to focus in on. For example, Roger Stone and Paul Manafort and Lee Atwater, who has passed away, and Charlie Black from BMSNK. The other one with the last name of Kelly didn't seem to be as involved as the other partners in this lobbying firm. And then we had Seth call in, who took up and participated, and we had a pretty decent conversation up until Brendan O'Connell did finally connect to the show. So I do appreciate the call in, Seth. So if you are listening, please call in. Or anybody else that would like to participate and add some of their thoughts of what's been going on. So yeah, this lobbyist, this Friends of Israel guy, Shai Massoud. So Google Shai Massoud. That's S-H-A-I Massoud, M-A-S-O-T. And you'll see this little rats connections and all the different NGOs and grassroots movements that he's connected to in the UK. And in the American sector, we've got the InfoWars Prison Planet. They're different radio, video blogs that their shows that are broadcasting to millions of people, and they're promoting war with North Korea. So there's a lot of hype going on with North Korea right now. I don't know what that's all about. I did have a poll on Twitter that I put together, and I said, which country is more than likely next on the list for a invasion? We already know that Syria and Afghanistan and Yemen and Iraq and Libya and all these other nations are already involved with intervention from NATO and the Arab countries and America and all the Western nations, for the most part, and especially Israel. Can never forget Israel. And on the show last night, we did discuss the different technology powerhouses in Israel and how spread out they are. And Kyle contributed last night and shared his experiences with the recruitment and how Technion students and people who trained at Technion were more favored to be selected for IT positions and technology. And so that's another aspect to the power that we're up against, is they're plugging, you know, what was this I think it was even a Jewish NGO that put this out. When you target the 1%, you're actually attacking like 47% of the Jewish community. I think it was 47%, but if I'm wrong, please correct me. I know it was in the 40s, but it's basically saying in a nutshell, the 1% who are at the tippy top of the pyramid, or however you want to, whatever sacred geometric figure you want to create, that the Jews, if you're talking and putting out your own propaganda and trying to wake people up to the 1% who rule over us, you're speaking about almost half of the Jewish population. So they're admitting that they're a good part of that 1%, the misproportional figure there, just like in universities that other people have talked about. So yeah, it doesn't matter where you're at in the globe, you're going to have some sort of Israeli Zionist Jewish type of plant, the signing type of spies, and just it talks about this in this four-part series also with the Al Jazeera documentary, four-part series that this Shai Massoud talks about how easily these organizations form, and it just takes one person and utilizing propaganda on social media and creating an identity for yourself. And you're pretty much recruiting. And he actually says, as soon as you know it, you have six people working underneath you. And I thought it was kind of funny that he chose the number six. So he made it and portrayed it to be that if you want to just create these different NGOs and grassroots movements to be pro-Israeli, it's a very simple thing to do. So the British people seem like, or the UK in general, just seem like they're just cucked with this cancer, this virus that, well, America is obviously what this Uncle Sam meme points out at you and says, you're basically Israel's bitch. So I don't know. I think that we just need to continue bringing on guests and talking about all of the different power and the NGOs of, and the names of these people. This documentary starts naming all of the different people in power and like the embassies and other additional, the educational institutions. And we got another caller here. Hey, Seth, welcome to the show, man. Thank you for calling in yesterday. That was a good conversation that we were able to have.
Yes, yes. Hello. I understand there's some people in the comments that are kvetching about the fact that I don't talk loud enough, and this is very hurtful.
I know, man.
In fact, I'm getting quite verklempt right now. I don't like this criticism.
Well, you do that really well, by the way. Good job, man.
No, great interview last night with Brendan, and you should have that. You should have him on again. In fact, I think you should have a interview with the Jerky Boys and see how woke they are. That would be interesting.
The Jerky Boys. I don't know.
We owe them I think we cultural have... debt for the character of Saul Rosenberg. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think we have Bridget on. I wanted to bring her on as well. Bridget, welcome. Oh, you muted yourself. Bridget, I unmuted again. How are you doing?
Hi. You know, I wanted to hang with you tonight. You did so great last night.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. So, what did you like about most from the show last night? Bridget.
Brendan. But, of course, you were so good with him.
Okay. Well, you were breaking up in the beginning. We just got you back. So, hey, Seth, what was it that you liked most about the interview with Brendan O'Connell last night?
I'm sort of hard to. I found this sort of favorites questions hard to answer without some thought. But he was really getting into. Let me stop and think about that. I mean, the fact that you got him on, I was kind of stressing that you're gonna have to carry the whole thing without him, showing up and being a no-show. Number one.
Yeah, that was nice.
I did like how he was getting into the information about Australia sort of being a I'm trying to think how you describe it.
Like a testing ground or a bunker, he said.
Yeah, testing ground / bunker. That was some interesting information. And, Brendan, he's a pretty fast talker. There's a lot of good stuff on the show. I definitely think he warrants at least another interview or two.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that I think we should do a show on actually the names of people instead of the, naming the things that we named last night with the technology. Let's start talking about the actual people and pointing the actual names out.
Yeah,
and how they're all connected.
It's interesting to get the outsider's perspective on the role of America and the United States in this whole saga, and also what's going on in these other countries, and the fact that, it didn't really occur to me that the outcome of this trial and the legal precedents that could actually impact legal issues here in the United States.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that either. We were talking about PK Truth with that conversation.
Yeah. So.
Hey, Bridget.
Yes.
What would you like to add?
Well, the trouble is when I hear you, I'm late. It's like a hodgepodge.
Hey, what do you think about the hype with North Korea that's being portrayed in alt media and like Breitbart and all of those different outlets? Seth, I can't really hear Bridget.
Give me a brief summary of it because I haven't been up on that.
Oh, just in a nutshell, all these different alternative
media sites. When I talk, then when I hear myself, I'm delayed.
Huh, interesting. Well, I mean, we can hear you, but it's like there's a long delay on your end to where then we get a little bit of what you were saying towards the end. So, did you guys hear about how the U.S. Army rescue and evacuate ISIS commanders over in Western Mosul, Iraq, just recently?
No, what's the story with that?
Just a simple fact that pointing out the fact that the U.S. is working with ISIS commanders and rescuing them.
Is that still news to people?
Just the fact that it's coming out in mainstream is pretty nice, though,
there's so many conflicts. It's like, how could you even keep up with all the news? It would almost have to be your full-time job. And for most people, I've recently gone back to having to take a job, and, it's a mind shift. Like, I had a lot more time to keep up on this stuff when I wasn't working 40 plus hours a week and trying to get everything squeezed in the outsides of that and raise a family and everything else. It's no wonder that they can pull the wool over so many people's eyes, because it's a full-time job to keep on top of all the BS that they're flinging at us through the news media and through all these criminal actions. I think people just shut down, they get overwhelmed, and maybe I don't know how much time they spend watching the Electric Chew for their information, but you know that's not going to be anything near the truth. That's going to be their carefully scripted propaganda. So, that's not the rosiest picture to paint, I guess, but that's sort of what I see going on.
Well, it's the fact that people on Twitter that are pro-Republican GOP and go America, Second Amendment, First Amendment, but then when you see, my America, rescuing the so-called enemy, this should be waking people up, but what I see on the outlet of social media of Twitter, these people are ignoring it and turning a blind eye because that goes against their paradigm of my America.
What's your position, I mean, if you have one, Nick, on this whole people that have been involved in the Afghanistan and Iraq conflicts, and what's their moral position? Because I see there's an awful lot of troop worship and also cop worship in the United States, which I think if these people were actually behaving ethically and legally, there's valuable roles to fulfill there. But I can't get on board with that. I'm sorry. I mean, I view a lot of these people essentially as people committing crimes under the color of government authority and getting a paycheck to do so. And that's why so many of them are putting a gun in their mouth. You know, it's like, I don't know, 20 a week or what? How many people are killing themselves is because maybe they actually do have a conscience and they can't live with it, and they just decide it's better to check out than to live with the reality of what they've done.
Well, I can speak for myself. Before I so-called woke up, I was going to a Baptist church. I was a Christian and sort of doing the, you know, what's best for my family is, hey, let's go to church as a family, you know, kind of a thing. And I would just start getting this feeling that the pastor, the Christian organization in itself, is pro-government, pro-police, kind of ties into a lot of Paul and his writings, or like Romans when it talks about obeying the state in so many words, paraphrasing there. So it's kind of instilled into people to be pro police in that way, I think, and pro-government and pro-establishment and pro-constitution and everything. It's like a whole package together when it comes to this Judeo-Christian American society, in my opinion.
And then what happened?
Oh, well, stopped going to church because I saw how this was during the invasion of Iraq in 2004-ish, 2005-ish. And I was just listening to the pastor's sermons, and it was just support our president and, you know, just be a good sheep and obey your government and support your commander-in-chief and all that kind of garbage.
Well, I mean, I was in high school when the first Iraq war kicked off, and it was over in, what, you know, three or four months. But I distinctly remember at the time everybody being all rah, 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 and I kind of knew, like, we weren't getting the full story. It was a carefully scripted presentation, and something didn't sit right with me. And, you know, later on I found out about the Highway of Death turkey shoot, where they basically slaughtered, like, 70,000 to 80,000 people that were retreating back to Kuwait, and I was just enraged by this, you know, because I had bought into the whole America, the righteous, and, you know, we're the good guys and everything, and this was direct evidence that, I mean, this is just wanton slaughter for no reason, and that's what kind of set me on a more of a sort of anti-war mindset, and then, you know, it blew over and it was gone. I mean, that happened relatively quickly. And so when the war drum started beating again after 9/11 and going to Afghanistan, Iraq, I mean, and keep in mind, we've had the web now for what, you know, almost 7 or 8 years. So it's not like we had the sort of, they didn't have the lock on information like they did back during the Gulf War, the original Gulf War. And still people bought it, dude. And to me, it was so obvious. It was, can we curse on here? Do you prefer?
Yeah, we're good, man. Say it.
That it was bullshit. And it's just, it's still to this day, it's difficult for me to understand, like, how any thinking person with a modicum of intelligence and an internet browser and a search engine at their fingertips could not have figured this out on their own by themselves. You know, like, why would you volunteer to go into the military to fight what was obviously not an essential defensive war? This is a war of aggression. It's an elective war. It's a war for global corporate empire. That has nothing to do with, you know, ensuring the safety of the people of the United States. And we need the troops on the goddamn border to prevent the invasion, not invading the countries on the other side of the planet. It's just, man, I get fed up. I get frustrated. And especially on top of that, there's all this thank you for your service culture and more troop worship. And they're never personally responsible for their decisions. And if they did join the military, well, you know, they're never in a moral position to refuse service and then go to prison. You know, I mean, the people that refuse to deploy, you can basically count them on two hands, you know, out of a million service members. So that, you know, just observing that reality and how people behaved in those situations, it doesn't, you know, exactly give me tons of hope. Now, maybe things can be turned around if people get woken up, but good God, like, the things that people can be convinced to do that are directly against their own interests and are only, I mean, every foreign war is always accompanied by domestic oppression and more tyranny. Like, I don't understand why people don't get this. You know, I mean, if it was a defensive war, that would be one thing. But, you know, I want to draw a map on a whiteboard. It's like, look, here's the country's borders. If you're fighting over here, that's not a defensive war. I'm just ranting now at this point. But
another part that, hey, Seth, another part that woke me up to the Iraq war is, why are they sending National Guard in there when National Guard is supposed to be, like you said, protecting our borders? They're not supposed to be going to foreign countries. National Guard is for protecting our nation. Pretty simple, right?
I didn't know that. I thought it was just reserves in case the active duty military got exhausted. But I've never looked into it, to be honest. So I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. So other than that, there was an Israeli attack on Syria where not only were parts in Syria bombed by Israel, at least one Israeli fighter jet was shot down too. So there's that open knowledge now that's out there. It should have been obvious for your average person anyway that Israel is involved with the attacks in Syria as well. So, and then the 1,000 more troops being sent into Syria by the U.S. I don't know if I brought that up. So, yeah, there's this whole, you know, people in thinking Trump was the non-interventionalist. So we're hitting a break. We'll be right back on the other side of it.
Of Judaism are issuing statements in support of refugees. These have included the Orthodox Union, the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, and so many of the Jewish organizations that you heard are co-sponsors of this event.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Renegade Roundtable. And I'm on the line with Seth, who participated last night in last night's show. And we've been discussing, well, part of my last night, you know, bits and pieces of my show from last night, and discussing, well, I wanted to get into, we were talking about Syria. There was CIA files show U.S. played role in Iraq's chemical attacks on Iran, where I don't know if anybody remembers seeing the video of Donald Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein with when those chemicals were given to the Iraq leader and used against the Iranian people. Did you happen to see that video ever before, Seth?
I haven't seen the video, but I've seen the picture many times. It looks like something that should belongs on the cover of a Pink Floyd album or something. Rumsfeld haircut.
So does it strike you to be shocking at all that the CIA files show the U.S. played a key role in the Iraq chemical attacks in Iran?
Well, these days, no. I mean, maybe I'm just a cynical bastard, but everything, that so many of what we are brought up to believe is just a lie that maybe we have a tendency to go overboard and question everything. It can literally drive you crazy because you're trying to reorient yourself and get a grasp on reality. And I've touched on this in earlier shows about how once you've been disabused of so many prior beliefs, you become less attached to whatever your current ones are. I mean, I consider myself a little more flexible and less dogmatic in my positions. I'm open to reevaluating new evidence and trying to sift out what the reality is. But we're under a tidal wave of propaganda and bullshit. It's just a never-ending avalanche. And so, sometimes it's difficult to find your way to the surface and just come up for some air. I mean, because they can just throw it up. And it's 10 times harder to debunk it and process it than it is for the people cranking it out, you know?
We talked about on my show last night with how Brendan feels that free speech is the number one thing that the Bolsheviks took away in Russia. And here's a article about how Google tells army of quality raiders to flag Holocaust denial. 10,000 contractors told to flag upsetting offensive content after months of criticism over hate speech, misinformation, and fake news in search results. So a Google army, 10,000 contractors, or Hasbro working their magic to attack us Holocaust deniers.
Oh, well, this is what you get for being led into the walled gardens like a bunch of lemmings and, Facebook and all these other big megacorp web properties. They're essentially like turning the web into a fiefdom of Google, Twitter, and all these, and Facebook, and a few other megacorps. And the other stuff necessarily is going to atrophy and die. I mean, I don't know if you remember back when the blogosphere was a lot bigger, and then people started getting onto these proprietary services. My sympathy is. It's frustrating because you can sound the alarm and warn people about these things. Like, look, if you take these steps and you get too invested in these sort of closed systems, then you're not going to have a lot of options down the road. But people blow it off. They don't care. They need a kick in the teeth until they discover that, yeah, maybe this wasn't such a good idea. So I actually am in favor of these crackdowns and censorship because it's the only goddamn thing that gives people cause and makes them seek safety in maybe some more decentralized and encrypted kind of communication systems. I mean, look at the uptake of the Signal private messaging app after the Trump election, mm-hmm. The numbers just skyrocketed, right? So,
and that's what they were talking about in the mainstream media is what the Trump administration, his cabinet, that was their way of the app that they were using to communicate with one another. And like you said, that the ratings and the usage and the downloads for that app skyrocketed it.
Yeah, but it's always driven by a crackdown and by fear. It's not driven by the Clay Shirky, who's sort of this internet pundit, wrote this article like way back in 2003 called the RIAA Succeeded Where the Cypherpunks Failed. And essentially it's about how all the crackdowns on copyright enforcement for file shares has driven more people to use encryption than any of the cypherpunks eat your peas approach is what he termed it. did. And it's true, you know. So it may sound perverse, but I actually welcome all these attacks because it's just going to drive the adoption of more resilient technologies that are going to be used to circumvent them, in my opinion. I think there's huge technological barriers to enforcing a free speech ban, and it's going to be the it's not really a Streisand effect. It's almost like when you smash something and it scatters into a thousand different pieces and those bloom. I'm searching for the metaphor or the name of the.
It sounds like what JFK said about the CIA, to smash that into a thousand pieces. But then you also have George Herbert Walker Bush, and I also believe Clinton, talk about the thousand points of light too. So I guess that's the same effect. I don't know.
But you know, again, there's this debate about, okay, was Trump actually a bad thing because it's gotten people a little more complacent, think, oh wow, we can breathe a sigh of relief. You know, we don't have to mobilize as much, and then the white genocide march marches on.
Yeah. He's going to build a wall by March.
Right. Have you read the article about the engineering challenges of actually building the wall across all the different terrain? It would be extremely difficult and expensive. I'll see if I can post it in the chat.
Hey, there's an article, by the way, about the wall. The U.S. seeks 30-foot-wide sample walls to bid for contract. So they're going to have different contractors who are going to try to win this bid, who are going to provide a sample of a 30-foot sample of it to be the one to be selected to build the wall. I'm guessing we should do a poll and find out if the one Israeli company will actually win the bid, though. I'm guessing that it will, but we'll see. Oh, by the way, we've got Alex from Georgia. Welcome to the Renegade Roundtable.
Hello, Nick. I'm calling to talk about the U.S. Army. I know you guys talked about that earlier in the show.
Sure.
And I have to say that a lot of soldiers that join the U.S. Army are being deceived by their leadership. The leadership is clearly working for Jewry, and they've been doing that since the end of World War II. And a lot of these soldiers, they have to reach a consensus that they're not going to deploy and that they are going to refuse to deploy. And they have to reach a consensus together to do this. And I have to say that in order to remove the parasite from America, that is going to be dependent on the U.S. Army, and they have to reach a precipice to do this. They have to reach a consensus, and they have to decide together that they're going to get rid of this parasite. The leadership is not going to do this for them. The U.S. Army soldier, the foot soldiers that are going into these wars and dying, they have to reach a consensus together to get rid of this parasite.
I agree.
That is the quickest way to fix this country's problems. It's very clear to me that the general population in America is not going to reach a precipice. This can only happen, the quickest way for this to happen is from within the U.S. Army.
And that has to be an individual choice on an individual basis for each person who's considering joining the military. And like what you're saying, if there is no military as far as this flood of recruits and people who are volunteering to be in, if there is no standing army, like who are going to be sent into all these other foreign nations, then there won't be any wars, right?
Exactly. And I was approached in 2007 when I was at Gwinnett Technical College in Lawrenceville, Georgia, to be recruited. And I was approached by a recruiter. And I told him that I didn't want to join the army because I didn't want to go to Iraq because I didn't agree with the wars in the Middle East.
Right.
And he tried to convince me that I could be in a support role. And I told him that I was going to Gwinnett Technical College for automotive technology, and he told me that I could be a mechanic. And, you know, I wouldn't have to go over there and start killing everybody. I could be in a support role and be a mechanic for the U.S. Army. And I told him no, still. And, you know, in
good man, Alex. Good man.
Well, in 2007 and 2008 was around the time when the U.S. economy was starting to tank. And it's very apparent to me that these Jews have a tendency to crash the economy every time they start a war. And it's apparent that a lot of these soldiers that joined the U.S. Army joined because they couldn't find a job, or because they had, you know, they were in a really bad financial situation and they needed a job. And the people that are willing to join the U.S. Army for a job will always be mostly white people, white men.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's why the majority of the, you know, the average U.S. soldier is a white male. And I guess I can understand, you know, if you know, they didn't have enough information for them to make an informed decision.
Well, Alex, it's also part of a tradition in some families, because they have different generations before that have all been in the military as well, so they're just following in line with family tradition.
Yes, that is true. That is very true. And, you know, I don't blame them for doing that. It's a lot harder to question joining if it's part of family tradition, and I definitely understand that.
And a lot of these people who do it based off of family tradition, these are the ones that usually elevate into higher roles into the military, too.
Yes, that is true. And like I said, I think that the quickest way to fix this country's problems will not be by reaching a precipice within the general population. This is going to have to be solved by the U.S. Army itself, and it depends on every individual U.S. soldier to make the conscious decision not to help the enemy achieve their goals, which is obviously the Greater Israel Project. But I don't think they intend on completing the Greater Israel Project. It seems like
Do you believe in the Kissinger concept, where he said 10 years from now Israel will not exist, in so many words?
I don't know about that, but it seems like these wars are not being conducted in order to complete the Greater Israel Project. They're actually being conducted just to create a refugee influx into Europe. And there's a couple of Jews on record who actually, you know, they claim to be white.
My fellow white people.
Exactly. They always refer to themselves as white people. And it's very apparent to me that these Jews, they want to be the new Aryans. This is something that Kyle discussed on his show before.
It almost reminds me of the caste system in India, where the Aryan, the white Indians of that time, were actually the upper echelons of the caste system. That is basically how Israel is set up in a lot of different ways, with the Kohanim and the Levite and the Ashkenazi, of course, are the ones at the upper caste. And then you have the Sephardi and the Mizrahim, and I guess Ethiopian or Nigerian or whatever, and other the conversos that, or even the Saad, House of Saad, the Dome, the Turk, the Ottoman Dome, that were even like the Misrata tribe over in Libya. So you've got these crypto Jews in all over all over the world. So you've got a whole caste system and the Michelin, you know, the mixed Jew. How much mixed are you is what depends on where you're at in the caste system. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the whole purpose of the wars, the goal of the wars in the Middle East is to create a refugee influx into Europe and even in America and Canada. And
were you listening to my show last night? I brought up the Kodinoff-Kalergi plan. If you were listening, I wasn't sure if you had a chance to listen.
I listened to some of it, but that's their plan. I don't think they plan on completing the Greater Israel Project. I think that they're doing this just to genocide the whites in Europe, America, and Canada.
Absolutely. And Australia, New Zealand, and Argentina is a huge operating base for the Israeli apparatus, too, as well. That's a huge Jewish population in Argentina. Argentina has a lot of Germans and Italians, but then you have a high percentage of Jews as well.
Yeah, and I have to say that in America, if something doesn't happen soon, if the U.S. Army doesn't do something soon about this parasite problem,
mm-hmm.
What's going to happen eventually is that the whites in America will become a minority in the 35-25%, and America will just become another South Africa, where the whites are openly being killed.
Yes.
Dispossessed and killed and genocided in their own country.
Yes, so exactly.
If something's not being done soon, within the next couple of years,
that's the direction we're going. And I think with the whole hype of Black Lives Matter and the alt-right and these Jewish centers and cemeteries that were vandalized allegedly, this whole chaos is intended for the people to go at each other's throats and this whole civil war.
Instead of the Jews who caused the problems.
Yes, of course.
It's apparent for anybody that looks into it that the minorities in this country, and I'm talking about the illegals, I'm talking about the Hispanics and the Negroes, are being used as proxies.
Oh, for sure. Jews love using proxy armies, and that's...
Well, I mean, they're never going to be able to conduct, open warfare in America against whites because they've never been, capable of doing that, and they're just not very good at it.
Right.
So they're using the Negroes and the Hispanics and the illegals as proxies in the same way that they're using Negroes in South Africa to kill the whites.
And they're also conditioning all of the white kids and in public schools, probably private schools as well, to be self-hating and to be anti-white yourself and to support these minorities. So we have a lot of different propaganda and a lot of different tools that are being used against us that we just have to come back with our own propaganda and continue doing what we're doing on radio shows and the documentaries that we come out with and educating and just trying to have these conversations out in public with people too and just try to plant a seed at least.
I agree with that. And in America, it's just very surprising that it has gotten this bad. And there hasn't been any large street protests against organized Jewry. I mean, the propaganda is obviously very useful, truthful propaganda against Jewry, but
what Brendan from last night was saying is basically if you look into Brendan O'Connell, the reason why he actually served time in prison is what he's trying to warn Americans about, because Australia is already at that point where you can go to prison for doing a public demonstration about Jewish power and whatnot. So he's trying to warn us about what Australia has already come to. So yeah, we're on the same page here. Richard, are you able to hear?
That's exactly right. That's the next step. They want to pass hate laws. They want to make us like Australia so that we can't speak up. That was terrible. I don't know if you know Brendan's whole story. It's horrifying.
And it's like these crown countries are the model for the rest of the world, you know, the UK, Canada, and Australia. And then, of course, India was part of the Commonwealth, probably really still is. And they're already going cashless and biometrics. Where I work, one of the owners is Indian, and to punch in, and, you know, like what you normally would punch in, they're using a fingerprint. So this Indian mentality that's spreading all over Western civilization, they're the slave model, the slave system that is being utilized to spread their dumbed down population and the biometric grid. And these are the type of engineers that are in IT, and they're starting to own a lot of businesses in America. So how employees punch in over where I work, you have to use a fingerprint. And that's coming to our country. It's coming to every European country. Biometrics. Seth, we haven't heard from you. What's going on, man?
So if I could say more about the hate laws.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Bridget.
Really like the tack Alex took. I really like what Seth was saying too about new systems for communication. That was great, because they are doing that where I live now, trying to get hate laws passed, and they're using the Jewish centers for it. There's been the call-ins. Who knows who's doing the calling in? And of course, the cemeteries, we're finding now, just they're just old cemeteries. Could have been a Catholic one that this happened in. So now they even have the local prosecutors standing up to the mic and saying how we have to get this hate laws passed so that could be like Australia. We could end up like Dear Brendan, where you're not even allowed to say the truth, even quote from their own books.
Yeah, and the Amazon started taking down and not selling any of Holocaust revisionism and World War II revisionism.
Right. And a lot of other books, see, that are truthful. So, yes, it's all happening. So it's good that we're talking about this. And I like what Alex is saying about the military. I'm afraid it's going to take the military, though, to stand up to the generals and all, because otherwise there is going to be financial collapse. And, a lot of us could starve to death, and the big collapse of the cities, fighting in the streets, race wars, food wars, and all. So we have to make it so we can keep communicating. Not letting
Absolutely. And I'm also concerned about the Council for National Policy Christian Mafia, the neocons and the Christian Zionists here that are pretty much in power in the executive, the Senate, and House. So I'm going to cover on my next show, if I'm doing a solo show, on Mike Pence and the C Street cult. It's the Foundation and the Family, I believe, is another. It's a Christian cult in Washington, D.C., and their headquarters is in a house, I guess, that is on C Street. So it's known as the C Street cult. So I believe Noahide laws, the Old Testament, the theocratic type of government, the clampdown in that way would also be something that we should look at, because the Council for National Policy is really one of the main NGOs right now pulling Donald Trump's strings, besides AIPAC, of course.
Yes. And we saw Pence, the way he collapsed to the Chambers of Commerce and all, over the gay marriage plan. Because, of course, in Indiana, they did not want gay marriage.
Right.
But they came and put pressure on him. The same way with the baker, who did not want to make a cake for the gay people getting married. But he gave in to them. So it's like more and more, as you know, Paul Roberts is now saying, where the courts are overriding the people's will. This thing with the refugees, so to speak, the Ninth Circuit saying that.
Yes.
They, yeah.
Yeah.
So losing our rights, so we cannot lose our speech.
Another thing with the C Street cult, what I found amazing was is that it's not just the Republicans that are part of this NGO or conglomeration of this Christian mafia. It's also Democrats, and Hillary Clinton also is involved. So that's interesting.
Yes, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And she's been involved for decades. This isn't something new. I guess there's a book that somebody wrote about it that if I could interview this person, that would even make things even more better as far as the information that would come out, because otherwise I would have to read it. But if he wrote it, he's going to be able to reveal more information. We've got Seth here. Are you still on the line, Seth?
He's gone silent.
Alex, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have myself muted. Can you hear me now?
Oh, I can hear you. We've got another minute. I just wanted to hear from you. If you had anything that you wanted to summarize with what we just discussed.
Yeah, I'll try to cram it in before the break. So with the regards to the free speech, I mean, fortunately, the United States has the strongest culture of free speech and laws. And I mean, what Brenda said, I think, is very true. If it dies here, then that's going to have worldwide ramifications, the United States being an empire and a major influence on the rest of the world. So it is interesting that you seem to like the other Commonwealth countries, or English-speaking, you know, white European countries, they have seemed to have given up their rights quite a bit earlier than people in the United States. And thank God we have a very strong gun and firearms culture here and a culture of free speech. So
yes.
This, I think, is going to be the last stand. I'm actually pretty optimistic because when I look around, I mean, I just talked to a guy the other day. I was talking about getting a CCP. He's like, you know, I went down there the other day. The line is out the door every day, and there's people from all walks of life. So Americans are arming themselves to the teeth. We have more guns in this country than people to pull the triggers. It needs to stay that way, you know. I mean, I really got concerned about how many people bought the hoax of Sandy Hook and some of these other psyops that are designed to, you know, get us to give up our guns voluntarily. Part of the plan. I mean, they want to disarm the vulnerable so that the wars can overtake us and, you know, rape and murder. So,
hey, Seth, hold on. We'll be right back at the break.
Broadcasting has a sister site where you can find insightful articles from the past and present, the latest in health and wellness, research, analysis of current events, profound poetry, amazing artwork, lots of videos and podcasts from other content creators, and so much more. We are in a struggle to awaken as many people as possible, put an end to our enslavement in this toxic culture, and create a future where we can be happy, healthy, and free. Go to renegadetribune.com, browse the great content, and do consider joining the crew in publishing your own original work.
Sunda zikura sunda, sunda zikura sunda, zikura sunda. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting.
Back, everybody, to the Renegade Roundtable. I'm your host, Nick Spiro, and I've got Seth on the line with me. I've got Alex from Georgia, and I've got Bridget, who muted herself. There's a lot of background noise coming in from you, Bridget. So welcome. We've discussed a lot of different topics so far, and if anybody wants to take this in another direction and like to call in or add to the conversation that we've already had so far, please call in at 747-999-6407. And if you are listening, you're not the average American that's probably getting drunk right now and probably watching basketball. It's the NCAA basketball tournaments, and a lot of money being thrown around in America. The Jews are getting rich off of all the gambling going on off of these basketball tournaments. It seems as if basketball is a Jewish sport, pretty much a sport version of Hollywood. And if you look at the majority of all of the NBA owners, including the commissioner of the NBA, you're going to see all Jewish owners. So that's just the nature, and unfortunately it's crept into the European countries as well. I know Lithuania, that's their number one sport. They have very tall people that live in Lithuania. They've got Viking blood, and they're very good at basketball, but unfortunately the sports are what also causes a lot of the meshing in of different cultures and different peoples, where you are, it's kind of like the military, where then you are then fighting for a black person or a Mexican person or whatnot. You're having that same team structure, then you pretty much become an anti-racist in a lot of ways when you're joining these team sports as well. Or if you're even consuming them and a participant in viewing them and going to the games, you're rooting on these different Negro baseball or football or basketball players, and you know, it just gets away from your culture. And that's the same thing with St. Patty's Day. It's a big thing here in Chicago. It's a big thing in Boston and probably New York, where a lot of these people are celebrating a holiday that they're getting shit-faced, and they're not even looking at the aspect of what St. Patrick's Day was all about to begin with, and the destruction of a lot of the Celtic people and the Druidic people that took place with the invasion of the Vatican, and possibly like a Jesuit type of infiltration and a genocide of a lot of the Irish people and the people who followed their nature type pagan, their culture and how they worshipped, and that was a pretty much an invasion of their culture and their heritage. So what do you guys think about St. Patrick's Day and how people celebrate that here in America or maybe elsewhere throughout the world? I don't know if the Irish people actually celebrate it like we do here in America. What do you guys know about that? Seth, go ahead.
Well, I mean, like most American holidays, it's just kind of another excuse to drink if you don't really know the history about it, right? So I'm pretty ignorant about the history of St. Patty's Day myself. So if you know more about the history of it, I'd love to hear it. I mean, I don't have real strong opinions. I don't really identify as Irish. I do like a pint of Guinness, but the sort of powers that be always like to co-opt holidays and twist them into something that is far away from their original meaning. And I really enjoyed the program. I think Renegade did on Samhain and learning about the actual history of what, you know, we call Halloween. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of an awakening for me. So I imagine there could be another program like that on St. Patty's Day that would give me some insight into what it was really about instead of just wearing green and drinking green beer and getting wasted, I guess.
I'm not sure Kyle's on the line, but I know that he's well learned in that subject matter with St. Patrick's Day. And then Alex, what are your thoughts on what I've started this second hour with?
Well, I mean, to me, it seems like there's a lot of people that are, you know, not white that are culturally appropriating Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
And I noticed that it's pretty much going on all around the world. There's, you know, Asian people celebrating St. Patrick's Day. There's Negroes, Hispanics. It's just, it's pretty much all around the world.
Interesting.
And it's obvious that if non-whites are celebrating St. Patrick's Day, it's obvious that they don't really know what it's about. Mm-hmm. And it's actually just like Halloween. It's pretty much a white holiday.
Yes. Right. And that was with Shauna and Kyle, I believe, from Odinia International, I believe it's called. That was the interview that was done in Samhain that Seth brought up.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Nick.
Yeah. Hey, Kyle, yes.
Go ahead. Just want to throw in a few things here. You mentioned the history of St. Patrick's Day, and I do just know a little bit, and I'll impart some of that. It does seem to go actually back to Egypt and the green man and the worship of Osiris. And actually, if you add an H onto Osiris, interestingly enough, you get O-S Irish. And so the green man does seem to be celebrated on this day. Osiris was known to be the god of things like corn and barley, and this is what beer would be made from. So the correlations don't even stop there. You have the Osiris being, I think he was born on the third month of the Egyptian calendar and the 17th day. And of course, 317 is St. Patrick's Day. So it does seem like it lines up a bit. Now, it also does appear to be a celebration of driving the pagans who were seen as the vipers out of the land. And this was not actually completely accomplished. Many did go underground, and many actually infiltrated the church. And so what you see with the some of the tales that are retained in Ireland is actually, which was done by monks, was actually a preservation of old Irish lore. And it's just amazing to me that we know all about the Norse and their gods and their stories, but we don't know a whole lot about the Irish and their gods. I mean, there is material there. We just don't hear about it very often, which is surprising because the Irish are so prominent around the world and actually beloved around the world. I'd like to make this distinction where you have two groups who have spread out around the world because of supposedly persecution and hardship. In one instance, it does seem to be undeserved with the Irish and what happened with the British Yiddish Empire. And on the other hand, it was deserved with the Jews. And so these two groups spread out across the world. And with the Irish, they became loved. And people wanted to celebrate with them and celebrate them. Now, I'm simplifying things a little bit. Of course, we know all about the no Irish need apply. And yes, there has been stereotypes against Irish and, you know, even just redheaded stepchild. Why is that something that can be used as an insult when we're supposed to have all of these kind of sensitivities, right? Because they are saying, you know, basically it's fair game for white people and Irish are part of the white people. Real quickly, I also wanted to mention that I don't think it's a bad thing if other people around the world celebrate white holidays and want to basically honor our culture. The problem is when we're completely integrated with them and it's everybody's holiday now. It needs to be put in its proper perspective. But anyway, I do think it's interesting to note how the Irish were actually pretty well received and did not face any further persecution around the world and often do very, very well, whereas the Jews, they don't really, well, they do well in terms of finances, but they are not necessarily always well received. They don't integrate very well. If they do, it's only for furthering their own ends. But unfortunately, there actually has been something of an alliance between the Irish and the Jews over the years, a tenuous one at best. The only Irish Catholic president there ever was shot in the head, and he admired Hitler and was working against Israel getting nukes. Any event, I've rambled for a little too long here. I think it's just it's interesting to take a look at the Irish and kind of why they've been successful despite persecution. And you can compare this with the blacks as well. So the Irish were enslaved in America. We don't hear anything about it, but they don't seek reparations for it. Many even do know this. Many Irish do know their history. Not enough. And they've gone on to do very, very well. And not even through ethnic networking, though there have been Irish mobs. But blacks, on the other hand, are not picking themselves up by the bootstraps, are not trying to basically distance themselves from their hardships of the past, but are instead using it as a tool, using it as a way to get free stuff. But yeah, that's my thoughts on the Irish and St. Patrick's Day for the night. Good roundtable, guys. I'm appreciating it.
Kyle, thank you. Two questions for you.
Sure.
What do you think of the fact that because Irish people are beloved all over the world, and they have been immigrants of a lot of different nations, do you feel that that could be part of the reason why you see a good percentage of them as being anti-racist?
Yes. And, yeah. Indeed. I think because of the history of experiences with not only just the British, you know, the redcoats and the enforced famine, which actually did murder 6 million Irishmen and caused, I think, maybe even 7 million more to emigrate, really reducing the population. I might be a little bit off on those numbers, but it was about 6 million dead when all was said and done when they stole all the food from Ireland. But yeah, I think that causes them to be a little bit kind of against this kind of waspy elite, which has sold us out so many damn times. These are the same people in America who they, you know, will look at as kind of the white privilege elite who they stand against as social justice warriors. And I get it. I understand where that comes from. I just think they're obviously misguided. And they turn their hatred far too much towards their cousins and sometimes even brothers instead of realizing the bigger picture. And this can be seen with the case of the IRA in Ireland, which was once a patriotic group which wanted all the British invaders off the soil. But nowadays they welcome all of the brown and black invaders, even though they still take a stance against the British. I mean, it's just, it's insane what has happened. And I think honestly, some of our people, the Norse and also the Celts, we are a little bit too, it's, the term is blue-eyed, in that we are naive, caring, and also Christian. And I think that has a big part to play as well. So I think the Irish Catholicism and their morality plays a part, in addition to the kind of shared suffering that the Irish have with different blacks, so often working side by side, let's say in the sugar industry, when they were the first slaves, the whites were the first slaves in the Caribbean before the blacks were brought in, because they would not burn as easily in the sun and could work longer and be more productive because of that. And so there's even, they're the remnants of the red legs, as they were called, in these islands that are still there. And it's just a completely hidden history because it paints such a different picture. And nobody really wants to think about or do anything to help these impoverished whites who are the descendants of slaves and who are still facing persecution to this day, and still having this notion of white privilege applied to them. It's just utter insanity. But yeah, I hope that answered your question. Did you have another one?
Yeah, the Michael Tesarian and his series on the Irish civilizations. What do you think of that?
Irish origins of civilization. It depends on what you're talking about when you say civilization, and which civilization. Because it seems that if you go back far enough, it can't come from necessarily, it could come from the Emerald Isle, but it seems like that was just something more recent. It looks like the origins of the Aryan people as a defined civilization could possibly come out of, well, you've talked about Ukraine, some areas in Russia like Swastika City, Arkham. These seem to be indicating that
Lithuania, yeah, with how
it looks like Eurasia seems to be a central point for the origins of our people. Now, in terms of civilization as we know it, yeah, it could have very well had a start in Ireland and the different waves of conquerors and immigrants to that isle. And there are a lot of interesting stories, like with the tale of Princess Scota from Egypt, who was apparently a daughter of Akhenaten, a princess who then went up there as she fled persecution, because Akhenaten was not very well loved for the reforms he put in, which basically laid the groundwork for monotheism. And this is where you get the name Scotland from, Scota. But, you know, the stories of the Tuatha De Danann, who people connect to the tribe of Dan, as these kind of angelic, somewhat, you know, magical god people who came. And then the different ones who can be traced to the Greeks as well. And the connection is actually right there in their war uniforms. And I did a show on this, probably back in 2013, but the kilts are actually, it seems, directly related to the Spartan dress that they would wear. Spardan, instead of Spartan. It seems that it could actually be Spardan, dealing with the tribe of Dan, Tuatha De Danann, and, you know, the goddess Danu. But yeah, there's a connection.
Danube River.
Yeah, the Danube. And I don't like how this is being used to say that Christian identity, you know, is correct, because you see these connections with Dan. It seems that actually the tribe of Dan, or the Tuatha De Danann, it was just this prominent Aryan people who were well-renowned travelers, explorers, that was probably just incorporated into the lore of the Bible. They stole everything. They appropriated everything and
Kyle,
put their twist on it.
Isn't there a part in the Bible where it talks about like 144,000 are going to be the chosen ones that will be selected before the rapture or something of that nature in the Christian Bible? And it actually excludes the tribe of Dan out of the 144,000.
That is correct. The tribe of Dan is not included in the 144,000. It is said that the Antichrist will come from the tribe of Dan in many of these eschatological studies. They point to him as the serpent, and Dan actually was represented as the adder, and an adder is a viper. And what's interesting is that the Druids were known as adders. And so Dan was the adder in the path, and the Druids were known as Nadreds, which means actually adders.
And St. Patrick was the one who got rid of the serpents.
Right, drove out the tribe of Dan, the last remnants from the Tuatha De Danann. Yeah, interesting stuff. I like this kind of history and everything, especially because it is so hidden and suppressed. But it is great to connect to your roots. This is where a lot of my family does come from. So, you know, I would go to a library where they'd have these book sales, and I'd see things on the Irish history, and I'd pick them up, and it's just so great. It's very refreshing. I was very hungry for this type of material, but you don't really see it being promoted anywhere. Isn't that just so odd that you have all of this talk about, especially the Vikings, especially, I think because of the way that they can kind of stereotype with that and make the Vikings look as these barbarians, but you don't hear much about the Irish history, and also you don't hear much at all about the Slavs and the way that they were before the Viking invasion and then the Christianization as well. But Slavic folk history is one of these things that just resonates so well with me. The artwork, the clothing, I just find that there's something very pure and magnificent in pre-Christian, folkish, Slavic culture.
Yeah, that's where I started looking more at my mother's genealogy and the Lithuanian and the Polish. So I started looking at, wow, Lithuania and Poland have this huge commonwealth. They were one of the major powerhouses in Europe for a long period of time. And I learned about the Hussars and how they repelled a lot of the Christian Teutonic Knights who were trying to convert a lot of the pagans to Christianity, and just their expansionism. A lot of it was being run by Jewish merchants. I know that the Teutonic Knights had their headquarters at one time in Venice. So we know who the merchants of Venice are, you know? So just interesting where you start looking at your roots, and just, they don't teach you this in school.
I think that honestly, for everybody out there who has children or who will have children, until we can get it in the schools, March of the Titans and probably a few other historical works that are out there that I just don't know about, it should be mandatory reading. We just know so little these days about our ancestors, and it's such an interesting history, and it really connects us to our roots. And what you see is that, honestly, what has been taking place in many regards, though we are advancing technologically in a certain direction, which I don't even think is a good thing, we have devolved in terms of our intelligence, in terms of our physical fitness, in terms of our spirituality. So while the mainstream narrative is that we're evolving constantly and everything's getting better and better, we've devolved. And I think that's one of the reasons our history, one of the many reasons that our history is so suppressed, is that they want to keep us on this downward trajectory.
And that goes to a Orwell quote where basically where he says the best way to control a people is for them to eliminate their, how they know their own history. So if they aren't aware of their history and their heritage and their culture, that's one of the best ways to control a people.
Yeah. Well, if they can sever us effectively from our past, do we really have much of a future? If we're not able to properly look at our place in history, if we don't know from whence we came, we'll be just kind of adrift in the sea, you know.
And there's an old saying, remember where you come from.
Yeah, and because this is never imparted to these children, that's why they're so easily swayed by the race-mixing propaganda. I don't think they would be nearly as effectively coerced by the mind control if they actually knew about their ancestors, had a connection to it. Because a lot of these people just kind of live in the now. They don't really realize what it took for them to be here, how many successful couplings had to occur for their life to be born onto this, into this world. And so instead they just kind of throw it away.
Can you plug your video, Kyle, of the race mixing agenda?
Oh, exposing the race mixing agenda. I'm not sure if it's up in Renegade Vids, but I know it's up on the Renegades in America / Renegade Broadcasting YouTube channel. I put that together in 2013. It has a lot of views. It got uploaded all over. There weren't many videos actually exposing this at the time. It was just a compilation of some readings. It was of some commercials. A lot of commercials. And it's gotten even worse now. If I was to do it now, it could be 2 hours long with all of the crap they're pushing. But such an obvious agenda. And almost every single advertiser out there is getting on board with it for these different brand companies. Every single just the promoted ads on Twitter alone. I don't have to turn on the television. I see race mixing pushed in my face every single day. And they use children in these ads all the time, too. IKEA is a big offender, but I've seen it everywhere with the, you know, a little white boy kissing the black girl. And
IKEA is like the United Nations. You walk in there and you see like everybody from every part of the world, at least over by where I live.
And what is the furniture? It is basically taking all culture, all tradition out of it and just replacing it with cheap uniform crap, which is utilitarian and will last for a little while, but has no real root to it. It has no tradition behind it. I'm going to jump off the line here. I want to let these other guys talk. Thanks so much for doing this here tonight, and I'll talk to you again soon.
All right, we'll be right back. We're great.
Rabbi Steve Guttel, who was president and CEO of the Jewish Council for Public Affairs.
There are two issues at the top of our agenda at the very moment. One is the unbelievably important immigration debate in this country. To make sure that immigrants from around the world, particularly those from south of our border, have a chance here.
And here's an interview with Rabbi Goldschmidt.
Essentially, what you're saying is that in these both, you're together with both Muslims
yes.
And people of other denominations.
And we see ourselves together, fighting together with our Muslim brothers.
Thanks, Jews.
Red, white, and blue within your heart, and I never thought I'd ever see the day when I hear you say, hey,
Welcome back to the final half hour of the Renegade Roundtable, and I'm your host, Nick Spiro. That was an excellent call by Kyle. I really appreciate all the excellent information that he just shared with everybody here. And that's per usual. The content coming out of Renegade is just cutting edge, and we need to do what we can to continue to support Kyle and the network here. And please also pay attention to the content that's coming out of the Renegade Tribune as well. Hey, Seth and Alex, how are you guys doing? What would you like to add after the call that Kyle just made?
Well, I would like to say that, propaganda is very useful, but I don't think Renegade Broadcasting has enough of an audience. It needs more people listening to this radio show. And I think what it's probably lacking is some more advertising. And
our listeners should be our advertisers as well, and tweet out if Kyle sends out a tweet saying the show's about to go live, retweet it. I'm looking at it, and it's like 3 retweets, and he's got a lot of followers. So people just, all you got to do is retweet. And you never know, you might grab somebody's attention on their Twitter feed, and then that will draw in listeners. Just a simple click of a mouse. That's all you got to do sometimes.
Exactly. And I was thinking that, there's other ways to advertise for Renegade Broadcasting. Get a custom decal for your car. One of those magnetic decals, or, advertise Renegade Broadcasting at a street, in a street protest or something. Because
Yes.
I don't think there's enough people listening to Renegade Broadcasting. That's probably one of the.
Well, that's the downside, and a lot of that. What it really has to do with, we're not on the Trump train. That's a big part of, and we're not Christian. That's the other part of it.
Exactly.
Seth, what would you like to add, my friend?
Kyle had some pretty good points there. I totally agree about this erasure of the history, and they've already made a movie about this starring Bill Murray. It's called Groundhog Day. And if you want to be able to, just think about waking up every day and it's essentially the same day because you don't remember anything, right? Groundhog Day is a great example of that, and that's kind of what we're being driven to in modern times, I think. Well, And also people that don't know their history and where they come from, make much better slaves and are more easily manipulated. And they'll also give up their heritage because how would they even know what they're giving up, if they don't understand where they came from? So I enjoy learning about the real meaning of these holidays because later on in life, I became quite cynical about them. But then it's really refreshing to discover that there actually is some real meaning and some substance to the holidays that's been, either covered up or perverted or twisted or commercialized. So,
and that's the unfortunate thing with America is it's been commercialized. It's about to make a buck and to distract the masses. The bread and circuses, the Circus Maximus, is why I called my show that.
Yeah, agreed. And what was I going to say about the? What are the other topics that Kyle touched on? Irish slavery, how we don't know anything about that. And, the difference between that is you didn't have, a Jewish advocate that was, priming them to nurse their grievances instead of sort of pull themselves up by the bootstraps. And again, Africans trying to integrate into a European society is going to be much further of a bridge to gap gap to bridge than the Irish would be. So there's certain immutable, I think, facts of biology and human biodiversity that you're going to make those, it's sort of apples to oranges to some extent. And America is interesting because it is, even amongst the different European peoples, you've got markedly different cultures and some friction with integration between the original, the Anglo-Saxons, the Germans, the Scandinavians. I don't think there's really a lot of French migration, but obviously there was quite large Irish migration later on in the history of the country. And
Well, the French were in different parts of North America. Absolutely. Hey, we got another caller. With the Louisiana Purchase, that was definitely a French controlled area. And then you had parts of Canada, of course, with their area that they occupied, that they pretty much still do. And there's the secession movement in Canada where they do want to separate from the British Crown aspect of Canada. I know Joyster's in the chat room, and I know she's aware of this group of the French portion of Canada that would like to separate from the motherland of the UK. We've got John Smith. How you doing tonight, my friend?
Hey, Nick. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah. What have you listened to so far, and what would you like to add to the conversation? What's going on?
I just kind of jumped back in. I missed the last 20 minutes or so. I'm trying to go through my mixer tonight. I don't know how the audio sounds. I'm trying to maybe step it up a notch, you know.
You're good right now.
Okay, cool. All right. Hey, really, I just wanted to chime in just saying, you know, join the chorus. I really enjoyed the show last night. And
thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Man, I have nightmares about stuff like that when you can't get the guests, you know, when you can't connect or you have audio issues.
I've got a good percentage of success rate with
following
through with, you know, coming on the show. So that's
and I've found that the system we're using now, so it's so much easier if you get somebody that's you know, pretty halfway technical, or even, you know, can just follow the instructions. I think sometimes it comes down to how literate the instructions are, well written.
I think I had somebody sabotage a guest to where the guest was going to come on my show, but someone else was aware that this person was going to come on my show and kind of sabotaged it and talked about, like, you know what network this is. And
yep. Well, that's what happened with John Humanity. He went ahead and made an announcement on his YouTube page, and all he did was take shit for a whole week. And then he came on the network, and he got a lot of shit. And then after he left,
I tried getting Douglas Valentine on, who talks who talks about the Phoenix operation program, Phoenix over in Vietnam. Yeah. And it looked like that was a go. He agreed to be on the show, and then he just backed out all of a sudden.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's like you say, once, you know, if the name, just the name comes up where it is, once, you know, once somebody poisons the well there with a guest, it's really tough. And then it can be everybody that they know too.
Sure. You know. And
Douglas Valentine writes a lot for Counterpunch, and that's pretty hard left. So that crowd would definitely be hostile to most of the racialist views.
Hey, I did get a leftist on. Well, I don't like even saying it like that, but somebody with I don't know, more liberal. I don't even know if that's the correct word. I don't know what you call them, but more of the more Marxist, I guess, leanings. I guess
on the more useful idiot side of the.
But more like the environmentalist type of mindset, and we were talking about this Farming Act that was going on in Missouri and how it was really going to benefit companies like Monsanto and the Smithfield Foods, the largest pork processing plant in America, was gobbled up by a Chinese company. And we were talking about that and how Goldman Sachs was part of the deal with the ownership of the take on that whole merger of the Chinese company and Smithfield Foods. So that was an interesting conversation. He came on, I think, for an hour, and he was a professor at some school in, I think, St. Louis, and he was a Counterpunch author, and he came on my show. But then at the very end of the show, I was like, thanks, Jews, and then we hung up, and I don't know if he'll come back on after I said that at the very end.
Well, Smithfield's pretty big around here. Yeah.
Yeah. What were you saying, Seth?
I think the term you're looking for is a watermelon Marxist. Green on the outside, red on the inside.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a meme that I've promoted too. And I think that's green is the new red. you know. I don't know if you guys seen that meme, Green is the New Red, like the Green Movement. Alex, what's going on, my friend? What would you like to add?
Well, I want to say that Kyle has provided some really great information on St. Patrick's Day. That's actually a lot of information that I didn't even know.
Yeah.
I supposedly have an Irish mother, though there appears, at least to me, that there's some German elements within this family. And I know that you yourself said that you had at least three grandfathers that were killed by organized Jewry. Is that correct?
Uncles. Four.
Uncle.
Yeah.
I've had...
my dad's brothers.
Yeah, I've had my grandfather from my father's side, and I suspect that he was murdered in Romania. And the story is that he turned over face down on a pillow, and he had epilepsy. And he suffocated himself in his sleep. That's the story that I was told by a few relatives. And then I had the grandfather from my mother's side. He died after he came back from World War II. And all of this happened in Romania. And I believe that he was very likely poisoned. So,
One of my uncles was killed, put in a trunk, and then they rolled the vehicle down a hill, and then another one, bomb explosion, and then another one was a hit inside of a tavern, like family restaurant, and that's how. And then another one was at his car dealership. My uncle had a car dealership. He was killed at his place of business, gunned down.
Yeah, and these, I have to warn everybody that's listening right now that these days they have a lot more sophisticated ways to murder people. And something that I experienced myself back in 2015 when I was targeted by a CIA framing program, which is actually being run by the Jewry. I mean, the CIA has been working for Jewry since it was created. They've actually, these days, what they do is they use weaponized X-ray machines. And this is something that happened to me in 2015 when I was living in an apartment. The woman upstairs was basically following me around my apartment with an X-ray machine.
What the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. You know, if I would move from the bedroom to the kitchen or if I would move from the kitchen to the bathroom, I would hear her footsteps above me, and she would follow me around my apartment. So I had to actually abandon the apartment, and I was basically homeless and living in my car for a while.
You sounded like what they say is a targeted individual.
Yes, I am still a targeted individual, and they even they even watch.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, I was just gonna say.
I mean, I mentioned on a previous call that they will even monitor purchasing habits at a grocery store, and they'll bring a poisoned item to the store before you go to buy it. So that's another way that they target people.
Oh, like they go off of your buying habits, and they know that you're buying a specialty item that hardly anybody is buying, possibly, and then they contaminate it with some cyanide poisoning or something like that.
Or if you get the loyalty cards, they know just what day, how the frequency of your trips. It's pretty simple.
Well, what I noticed is that it's always a low-level poison that's very hard for people to notice. It doesn't have very severe symptoms, but you'll definitely feel it when it happens. And
polonium, Roger Stone allegedly got poisoned.
I really doubt it. I mean, Roger Stone is a Jew, and I really doubt anything that he says is true. But another thing that I noticed when I was in New York. Because when this started in 2015, I became homeless after a while, and I had to leave Georgia. And I was in Tampa for about two or three days and I left Tampa and went to New York City. And because I was homeless and I was no longer living in an apartment, they went ahead and brought portable x-ray, weaponized x-ray machines in handbags. These are actually powerful enough that you can actually feel that there's some kind of disturbance in your, I don't know how to describe it, but you can actually feel.
Does it affect your heart rate?
It does sometimes. It depends on how the power level. You know, these are, you know, high-yield weaponized x-ray machines, and it does cause cardiac palpitations if it's, if the power level is high enough. But, I mean, in my case, I was, I don't know if it's because I'm sensitive to it, but I definitely felt it. It's very hard to describe, but I felt it. And that's what they resorted to when I abandoned my my apartment. And then they also have basically high-yield microwave weapons. Which is not like an X-ray weaponized X-ray machine, but these microwave weapons can induce a number of medical conditions, and I think that it's very likely it was very likely used to cause heart attacks because I also noticed that these microwave weapons do cause cardiac palpitations and. You know, I wrote an entire report on what happened since 2015, and when I started looking more into this, I found a bunch of people that died from heart attacks that were targeted by the CIA or, you know, the jury. I found, you know, other people around the country and in even in Europe that that have died.
I think Bill Cooper and other people have talked about this document called Silent Wars. Quiet weapons or something of that nature, and it talks about these type of devices and warfare on the populace, and it's also been discussed with like on other shows about like Michael Aquino and a lot of these other intel officers who are into utilizing this type of weaponry against the populace as well. So this is something that's real. It's not just this conspiracy theory that you might hear on some other radio shows that talk about UFOs and things of that nature, but these type of weapons, they do exist. So go ahead, Alex.
I mean, when they use these weapons, because there's no physical evidence that they use the weapon. I mean, if you think about it, to have evidence, you basically have to have a detector, some kind of radiation detector to detect the X-ray, or some kind of detector that detects, high-yield electromagnetic fields. And you basically have to have a detector. You're going to have to record the detector, and then you're going to have to rely on the police to get a search warrant to search someone's apartment or someone's house where you think this, energy weapon is being used. And, you know, by the time they get a search warrant, the weapon is portable and it's going to be moved. So
I can see drones being used for this as well to be able to beam it off. I can see cell phone towers already being utilized and radio towers being utilized for this as well.
Yeah, it's the perfect way to assassinate people without leaving any physical evidence. So it's very difficult to actually have any
when I drive on the highway, I feel those palpitations that you talk about sometimes and anxiety attacks, and I never felt like that before, but it's
Hey, Nick, all these
radio towers and cell phone towers that are all along the highways. I don't know. And then there's no nature at all. It's just all concrete and asphalt. Go ahead, man.
That's not a joke, because I bought an EMF meter, a tri-field EMF meter, like a few months ago, and one of the things, the biggest surprise was the levels of EMFs that you're exposed to on the freeway. And even at some stoplights, you are getting juiced inside of your car. I mean, almost as bad as being, within about 50 feet of a cell phone tower. I'm not kidding you. So I don't know if it's the combined effect of everybody's smartphones on the road plus the transmitters or whatever, but you know, and it, once people develop electromagnetic sensitivity, I believe the body's immune system responds to it as a threat or an irritant, and that's why you experience those sort of reactions. You can even go into anaphylactic shock. So if you guys really want to measure this stuff, you can buy one of these meters for like $180 shipped and start taking measurements, and you're not just kind of fearing the unknown. You're actually getting to know your environment and when and where you're being exposed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, what I want to say about that is that you can go ahead and order an EMF detector, but the problem with that is that you have to rely on shipping. And obviously, if you're being targeted with these energy weapons, you're probably going to get a sabotaged item.
Maybe you can do it at a friend. I mean, there's many ways around that.
You can have it shipped to your company, and then it could be open-ended to where there's not a specific person with their name on it. It's just sent to that company that you're working at. A lot of companies will allow you to get your mail over sent to your work.
What do you think you were targeted? Well, I mean, there's a history in this family, and I guess that this problem started after the end of World War II. My grandfather, from my father's side, was Konstantin Karadzha, and he was a prince. He was basically in Germany during the Third Reich. And I believe that my grandfather from my mother's side was in Germany as well. And that's probably where they met. Like I said, my grandfather from my mother's side was very likely poisoned. And my grandfather from my father's side was very likely suffocated. They suffocated him in his sleep, because I don't think there's a lot of people that, you know, die because they have epilepsy and they turn over face down on a pillow. But
did you and your family pose? I mean, what would be the motivation to kill them?
Well, like I said, Konstantin Karadzha was a prince, and we are related. Me and my brother are related to him, obviously.
Feuding bloodlines.
Yeah, it's they basically. I don't know Karadzha. Exactly what. I'm sorry. What was that?
How do you spell that last name, Karadzha?
It's with a K. It's K A R A D G A. I think it is, and it's also from my mother's side. I believe is probably related to Stefan the Great, which was a Romanian ruler at least 400, 300 years ago. And it's a possibility that this family is either related to Stefan the Great or Vlad Tepes. I'm not sure. So that's probably why we're being targeted. But like I said, I'm not sure exactly what Konstantin Karadzha was doing in Germany during the Third Reich.
My family was targeted too. You know, I mean, that's, you know, if you are a resistance to the order and that's been in existence for however long and you oppose the existing order, then you can become targeted individuals, your entire family, your associates. So I kind of get it.
Well, I mean, what they do is that, you know, they try to relieve basically the white population of any possible leaders, which is what they did with the Romanov family.
Correct.
So, you know, if there's anybody that's of significant importance, or that has ancestors that, you know, the white population might turn to for leadership, and they're on controlled opposition, they're obviously going to be targeted.
And the people that are in power are going to continue maintaining their power by recruiting and elevating their own bloodlines on a consistent basis from when they are tots all the way through the learning institutions, and then they elevate to positions of power. And that's what we're really up against is these bloodlines that are in power today, because they're going to just continue recruiting their own people.
I mean, exactly. I mean, it just seems like they're targeting anybody that's of, you know, significant importance, or anybody that has ancestors, and they can prove that they have ancestors that were, you know, leaders. Anybody that's that has leadership qualities is being targeted by this framing program. And
some say that we might be up against, let's say, like even the Merovingian bloodline. That could be a possibility. So we know we're battling, and you know, these people are intermarrying, and you know, this is their way of maintaining power, and they're going to target people that are going to or have had a tradition, a bloodline, clans that have opposed the current bloodline system that's in power today. Seth, what would you like to add before we close out the show? We have two more minutes, and then we'll go back to Alex.
I don't have anything to add right now, and I've been accused of like monopolizing the time before, so I'll let somebody else talk.
All right, go ahead, John Smith.
Yeah, okay. Hey, thanks for filling in, or coming on and doing the roundtable tonight. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, man.
We'll do a little self-promotion. I'm going to have our pal Frederick C. Blackburn on this Thursday at 10 o'clock. So
Blackburn 9. That's good. Yep. That'll be a good show.
Anybody that listens to him on Wednesday and actually want to interact with him and talk to him, you will be able to do that.
The guy's got a lot of knowledge. He's a good guest to have on.
Yeah,
all right. So we'll be looking forward to that show. And then Alex.
I don't really have much to add. I want to thank you for doing the show. I think you're doing a very great job.
I appreciate that, Alex. Thank you for listening and for calling in tonight. You shed some light on some subject matter that people should really focus in on. People are targeting individuals. There are like people like Gary Webb, who talked about the CIA and control of the drug trade. And he was a targeted individual. He didn't shoot himself in the head twice.
Exactly.
And I'd like to thank Kyle for calling in as well, and everything that he does running this network, and everybody that listened tonight. And listen to Kyle tomorrow night. Thank you for listening, and everybody enjoy the rest of their weekend.
I had a friend on the Liberty. They tried to sink her to the bottom of the sea. She kept on floating into history. Unmarked jets flew down from the sky and shot up our ship, and nobody knew why. A torpedo boat blew a hole in her side. A lot of sailors hurt, and 34 died. Come to find out it was part of a plan. They'd sink our ship, she'd go down with all hands. Blame it on Egypt to trick us in a war. The trick didn't work, the crew showed them what's for. Did you have a friend on the Liberty? I had a friend on the Liberty. Who tried to sink her? It was Israelis. But she kept on floating into history.
Circus Maximus provides an in-depth analysis of geopolitics, historical events, social engineering, and the Kosher Nostra, who are attempting to bring about a global, technocratic, feudal system. Nick Spiro brings forth his passion and years of research, unveiling the esoteric agendas of the deep state, black operations, NGOs, think tanks, secret societies, ancient bloodlines, and controlled opposition movements behind the Jewish veil. Tune in live every Friday night at 10 p.m. Eastern on Renegade Broadcasting.
And the rest I've set upon myself. As the light fades and I set into myself. Some moments I'm caught by the deceit of desire. Flickering shadows drawing self from the